While we were marching through Georgia, everybody swing your honey, swing your high and low. The Alaman left for the old left, and around the ring you go. A grand old right to left, walk on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia.
As you know, Moving Through Georgia is a history podcast, mostly focusing on Northeast Georgia and generally avoiding modern politics. However, I was reading about the recent Supreme Court decision involving the 14th Amendment and decided to do a little research into it. So I'm going to share with you what I found about the 14th Amendment and the exclusion clause as it applied 150 years ago, not last week. The 39th Congress convened on December 4, 1865. The Civil War was over and Abraham Lincoln was gone. Andrew Johnson was in the White House and was ready to punish the South for their rebellion, pretty much in opposition to Lincoln's plans for the end of the war. At the start of the congressional session, the issue of those elected from former Confederate states arose. Johnson felt that the Congress needed to include representatives and senators from those states because without them, those in the South would be taxed without representation. The majority in Congress thought differently. On the opening day, the clerk of the House simply didn't read the names of those who had come from former Confederate states, and so none were sworn in. The first order of business after roll call was to form a committee for Reconstruction, a committee that wouldn't include anyone from the states directly affected. The basis for keeping those congressmen from being seated came from the Insurrection Clause of the 14th Amendment. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. I copied and pasted that into ChatGPT and asked him to summarize it on a 5th grade reading level. It came back with, "This says that if someone has promised to support the United States Constitution, like by being a member of Congress or another government job, they can't keep that job if they try to go against the country by rebelling or helping enemies. But if Congress agrees, they can let that person work for the government again." That's not the worst summary I've ever heard. Well, let's look at Alexander Stevens. As a United States congressman before the war, he would have taken an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. And at first glance, yeah, you could say that he had participated in an insurrection. But with a closer look at the issue, it becomes a little murkier. Why didn't the United States government prosecute Stevens and Jefferson Davis after the war? Testifying before the Reconstruction Committee, Stevens stated that his beliefs in secession had not changed, but he would abide by the fact that the South had lost the war and that he would work to reunite his state with the Union. After time, the Reconstruction Committee would warn the 39th Congress against allowing former Confederates back into the fold, calling Southerners like Stevens unrepentant and unpardoned, and that they were professing no repentance, glorying apparently in the crime they committed. Well, this is because they didn't believe that they had committed a crime. Confederates like Robert Toombs believed that secession was entirely legitimate, and there wasn't a whole lot the federal government could point to prove it wasn't. Everyone involved in the Civil War had a basic knowledge of one part of a country breaking off and becoming a new country. Georgia was British soil until the Revolution, when the residents declared that they were independent. Texas was Mexican soil until the residents declared that it just wasn't anymore. Regions, areas, what have you, broke off from larger countries all the time and became their own countries. The Constitution of the United States has methods for states to join the Union, but no method for a state to leave the Union. So, does that make it illegal? When the Constitution was written by former British subjects, did they intend the British Union to be breakable, but their union to be unbreakable? So again, the question comes back, what do you charge Stevens and Davis with? Well, you could charge them with theft. There was probably a lot of property belonging to the federal government in the South that they never got returned. But let's face it, if they were put on trial, there would have been a huge outcry for them not to be charged with theft, but with treason. All right, lock them up and charge them with treason. The first thing their lawyers are going to point out is that you can't be charged with treason if you are not a United States citizen. Were Stevens and Davis United States citizens throughout the war? Well, they certainly didn't think so. The defense lawyers could make a case that even the United States treated them as if they were no longer United States citizens. One example of that is that the United States did bargain with the South over prisoner exchanges, and that is something that you really only do with another nation. Enough examples like that could sway a jury to believe that the federal government was treating the Confederacy like an actual nation. And if that's true, then Davis and Stevens were no longer U.S. citizens and therefore were not committing treason. And so, getting back to the point of this episode, Stevens couldn't be prevented from taking his office in Congress. Well, no, because there is a difference between theory and execution. Even though secession may have been allowed in theory, in order to bring it about, they had to depose the duly elected state legislatures of each one of those states by force. That is, in fact, rebellion. If the southern states truly wanted to be independent, it could have been managed through negotiation, through voting, through referendums. A good example of that is the state of West Virginia, which broke away from the Confederacy in 1863 and became part of the United States without a shot being fired. Another point to consider. When the Confederate Army crossed their own border and entered Pennsylvania to fight a Union Army, they were no longer an army defending their own territory. They were the aggressors, and therefore anyone giving aid or comfort to that country was technically committing treason. We could argue these points all day long, but no one in the United States government wanted to do that at the end of the Civil War. Luckily for Andrew Johnson, Jefferson Davis, Alexander Stevens, and all the other Confederates didn't demand trials. They didn't demand that their side be tested in a court of law, because who knows how that could have turned out. And the whole issue was more or less put to rest with the Amnesty Act of 1872. That act removed most of the disqualifications, and President Grant followed up by pardoning just about everybody except about 500 of the top Confederate leaders. So that is a quick look at the application of the 14th Amendment and the Insurrection Clause as it applied to the American Civil War. If you have a comment on this, if you have another angle on this, I would love to hear it. I find this stuff fascinating. movingthroughgeorgia@gmail.com. And to wrap it up, in 1869, a case came to the Supreme Court. As part of the Compromise of 1850, the state of Texas had been awarded $10 million in United States bonds to settle some border disputes. Not all the bonds were sold right away, and when Texas seceded in 1861, the remaining bonds were sold by the Confederate government. Even though the United States Treasury had announced that it wouldn't honor bonds sold by a Confederate state, there were some shenanigans and the bonds were sold to a brokerage firm and a few were redeemed for their value. After the war, the new Reconstruction government sued to regain the bonds, claiming that they had been sold illicitly. And at the heart of the debate was the very issue of secession. Was Texas a U.S. state in rebellion during the war, or was it part of a separate nation? In a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court laid out an opinion on secession. Salmon Chase, Chief Justice, stated that the United States had begun under the Articles of Confederation and then the Constitution. With these documents, the Union was solemnly declared to be perpetual. For Texas in particular, when, therefore, Texas became one of the United States, she entered into an indissoluble relation. All the obligations of perpetual union and all the guarantees of republican government in the Union attached at once to the state. The act which consummated her admission into the Union was something more than a compact. It was the incorporation of a new member into the political body. And it was final. The union between Texas and the other states was as complete, as perpetual, and as indissoluble as the union between the original states. There was no place for reconsideration or revocation except through revolution or through consent of the states. So the Confederate government of Texas was technically in rebellion by forcibly removing the duly elected government and replacing it with another. Everything that the new government did was invalid, so the state never technically seceded. And did you notice that the language of this resolution opens the door for a state to leave the Union with the consent of the other states? Chase specifically points out that a majority of Texas residents ratified the ordinance of secession, but then turns around and says that that's not good enough to leave the Union. Instead, that would only be allowed with the consent of the other states. Well, anyway, that all came too late to prosecute Stevens and Davis, and, as you know, so far no other state has put that particular decision to the test. Hug around, oh, right, left, walk on your heel and toe, promenade that pretty gal to Georgia. That's all.